You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 59 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retro.
And this week we're joined by Martin. I want to pronounce your surname correctly, and it's going to completely fail now that I think about it, Martin. Help me, Martin.
Lejeune.
We've got Martin Lejeune from the Extended Edition podcast here with us this week. Martin, say hi.
Hello.
Okay. We're going to be discussing a couple of bits of news, a little bit of Eurogamer, and we're going to be spending the last part of the show talking about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the pilot episode, which aired last week, because Americans got it at the beginning of the week. We didn't get it until the end of the week, but that's fine. At least we got it in the same week. But news. Newsy news. So we had, a few months back, a discussion around free-to-play because the Office of Fair Trading had begun an investigation into the effects of free-to-play games and their effects on children and sort of purchasing habits within app and various things that basically had kind of surfaced from numerous disgruntled parents who'd suddenly found that their little darlings had spent quite a hefty amount of money through in-app purchases on various devices.
Little darlings.
Yes. there may be double speech marks around somewhere in this sentence. However, I think they went in quite open-minded, but they were genuinely sounding concerned earlier this year about the issue. And
that's because quite a few games were taking the piss.
Yeah, and they've released their initial findings this past week, and they've kind of put together these 8 principles, which they are now going to consult with the industry and sort of the general public or concerned parents, basically, until I think something like November, and then they'll produce the sort of final thing. But the 8 principles include such things as having, like, the costs associated with the game should be provided clearly, accurately, and promptly up front before the consumer begins to play, download or sign up to it, or agrees to make a purchase. So making it very clear that you could end up spending money.
Yeah.
When you're using the app.
Agreed.
Because that would be kind of useful to do that. Well, let's pick another one. I've got a whole list. I'm scrolling past it. I have actually got all the basic 8 principles. They went into quite detail. I'll link to the document, which, because it's available publicly, in the show notes. Let's find another one. Oh, the commercial intent of any in-game promotion of paid-for content or promotion of any other product or service should be clear and distinguishable from gameplay. That's not always the case, I have to say, at the moment. A game should not mislead consumers by giving the false impression that payments are required or are an integral part of the way the game is played if that is not the case.
You must give us money for this thing, or you can just keep grinding on doing this thing and get the points.
That's pretty much what they're suggesting there.
Yeah.
Games should not include practices that are aggressive or which otherwise have the potential to exploit a child's inherent inexperience, vulnerability or credulity. The younger the child is, the greater the likely impact those practices will have, and the language, design, visual interface and structure of the game should take account for that. A game should not include direct exhortations to children to make a purchase or persuade others to make purchases for them. And I'm not going to read the full thing out, but the last principle they put out was kind of like payments should not be taken from the payment account holder unless authorised. Which is interesting, and the part of this whole problem with in-app purchases comes down to children either guessing the parent's password for the device.
Yeah,
that's part of the problem. We feel like they're sort of mark in-app.
If I give you the password, will you stop bothering me? I'm going to watch the football because I am a lazy, derelict parent.
Yeah, so that's one of the problems. And then there's the problems of having even properly set passwords up to protect against excessive in-app purchases anyway. And it's just kind of like, it's all great and well perhaps trying to get the design of the games to be less aggressive in how they target in-app purchases to people. At the same time, though, it's again an issue of parents perhaps needing to parent a bit. I know it's hard.
Oh, surely not.
I know it's hard, and that we live in busy 21st century lives, and you know we're waiting for flying cars, and we work stupid hours, and we just still decide to have kids, and we then can't be bothered to look after them properly. But you know, maybe we should pay attention to what they're doing, and at the same time, if we're going to buy pieces of equipment which have the ability to ruin us if the information contained on them gets into the wrong hands, perhaps we should also take some personal responsibility for the security of said device.
Nah.
Oh well, I know it's wistful thinking.
And this is the week after GTA 5.
I know.
Well, you know, a week and a bit, so almost 2 weeks.
Well, don't forget we had, like, was it a couple of weeks ago, those survey results for, like, how many mums will ignore, like,
oh yeah,
age ratings on games. Yeah.
And you have to be outraged by the content of said games if they are pointed out in a tabloid.
I mean, there was a case recently of a mother actually bought, you know, kind of GTA 5 with their kid, realised the content, then actually put it up for sale. As second hand.
Wow. The big 18 rating on the box, and the fact that the media has been going on about it for about the last decade.
Mm.
Not, you know, well, a little bit of a hint.
Obviously, games are for children, otherwise, they'd be called a job.
That's, yeah. Jesus. A mate of mine has said that, you know, he's got, you know, youngish kids, you know, a son who's about, you know, age 11. And of course, his son has been badgering him for GTA 5, and he's like, yeah, I've got it. You're not getting it. You're not playing it. But he said he has looked on his son's, you know, friends list, and about 5-6 of his friends have been playing GTA 4.
Yeah.
And so, well done. Well done, parents. You're doing well.
That's all the issues. I mean, with my kids' tablets, they set up to their own individual Google Play accounts, which I've created for them. So there's no card details attached or anything like that. And at the end of the day, I give them vouchers. When
yeah, you can do that. There is no reason why you can't.
And it took me about 5 minutes to do. Simple as.
That's because you're not a lazy ass bastard.
I think part of the problem is that if, you know, obviously parents that actually look after their kids in this respect properly, sometimes it almost like feels like they're punishing the kids. Because, you know, all of their friends, they have parents who don't really give a crap, as it were, and will just buy them anything.
And so yeah, but then on the other hand, it's like, yeah, I'm not a parent, so I've not got this, you know, pressure.
I mean, to be honest, I don't know what we're expecting parents of actually being capable to all properly sort of parent their kids over the issues of video games and stopping them doing things with them that they shouldn't be doing because they're either too young to play the game, or the game's trying to persuade them to buy lots of things on a credit card. Did anyone see the stats that came out over the last day or so about hospital admittances of, like, those aged under 11 or younger for alcohol abuse symptoms or something in this country?
Obviously I've been out of our range for, you know, since about Wednesday, and busy with other things as well. But
at the same time, I
heard some stuff, and my response was, really? Yeah, that's a big surprise.
11-year-olds can't play GTA, turn to drink.
Yep. that's clearly what our society is driving.
It's a vicious circle.
Yeah, a vicious circle that 11-year-olds have been driven to.
To be fair, at least they're not drinking and driving in GTA 5.
That's true.
Yeah. I can go with that. I'm going to move us on to a slightly less depressing piece of news, depending on your
point of view. Depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. So last week there was something I think everyone's jumping on the comic book show bandwagon due to, obviously, S.H.I.E.L.D. starting. The fact that, obviously, Green Arrow is going to be kind of kicking up again, and just the continued obsession in the mainstream media with superheroes. Anyway, comic book TV series announcements. Gotham, the TV series, was announced by Fox. Meanwhile, NBC are looking to create a Constantine TV series.
Why now?
And don't forget there's that Flash spin-off from The Arrow as well.
Oh yeah, there's that too, obviously.
Yeah, we discussed spin-offs last week.
Everything's happening. I mean, the thing is, though, is that, I mean, I think Flash will be fine because obviously they'll be connected, but Gotham's going to Fox, so that means it's unlikely to tie in.
To be honest, it does make me wonder whether this is actually a push from the comic book side, because obviously they want to get their stuff more mainstream, and you know, the more people that kind of get into stuff like Arrow and you know, Gotham and whatnot, the more people will actually be likely to read you know.
At the same time, there's going to be a degree of like royalties payments going on somewhere by having these characters licensed into other mediums. If it's not necessary, it's unlikely to be directly to creators, but it certainly would be directly to DC.
I think it's kind of multi-pronged reasoning. For one thing, a lot of the superhero films are obscenely expensive, so they have to be summer blockbusters. Otherwise, you know, they're going to be very small affairs. On the other hand, kids have got far more to do with their time now than read comics. So that market is in decline as a mainstream hobby. It has its, you know, has its fans, but they have to be more fans now than you know, little Bob's got, you know, Bob Ed, you know, gonna go to the newsagents and pick up a comic. It's a little bit less likely than you know, it was a few decades back. So this is kind of, they're trying to build up the base and also save a bit of money. They said they can get a bit of money with it being on TV. They can increase the base for the upcoming summer blockbusters because they can have tie-ins. But I don't quite get the logic of doing sort of, well, I suppose if it was Japanese, they would, you know, they would be guiding kind of spin-offs, where they, you know, a lot of them, they don't have direct bearing and they don't have the main characters or anything like that. They're just sort of subsidiary series, and I'm not quite sure I get the logic behind that.
Well, I mean, the thing about obviously we're talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. later, but the thing about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is that it is set within the same world as the Avengers. Gotham,
but it doesn't have the people, you know, the superheroes that people want to see.
Yeah, but by the same token, as far as I'm aware, this new Gotham, it's not going to be connected to Nolan's Batman films.
DC were wanting to do a Batman series, but Nolan put his foot down and said that he didn't want anything else being made whilst he was doing his trilogy.
Well, fine, he's finished it now.
As it is, Gotham's looking like it's going to be the equivalent of Commissioner Gordon's Year One, because it's before Bats turns up. And, I mean, it's hinted in the comics, like, in, like, Batman Year One, like, what Gordon's life was like prior to Batman really making the scene. So, and in a way, it should, in theory, at least if they're being a little bit true to the comics, means they won't have too many superpowered supervillains running about the place, because the explosion of superpowered supervillains that happens in the world of Batman is due to Batman more than anything else. Like, you had, like, the odd crazy around, but it was mostly the local gangs that were running everything, you know, sort of Italian mob, Russian mob, Chinese mob, yeah, etc., all running all the rackets and everything in Gotham. And that would be the kind of stuff that Gordon was mostly dealing with prior to Batman showing up and decimating the local crime families.
Are you guys familiar with Gotham Central at all?
I am, yes.
But because it seems like that would be a ready-made thing to go over to TV, and why not just do that?
I mean, there's been talks, when they previously talked about doing like a Batman series, that it would be based off of something like Gotham Central. But with the fact that they're trying to focus on Gordon, that would seem to indicate that it won't be like that so much. Because even Gotham Central didn't focus that much on Gordon.
No. I quite like the fact that they're looking to focus on Gordon, Jim Gordon, because he's quite an interesting character in the comic books anyway, but I don't understand why they're just jumping on the bandwagon. It's just going to decimate it.
The thing is that it may not even necessarily get to full series.
It's Fox. I don't even know why they've gone in Fox, for fuck's sake.
Well, I mean, there's been Warner have like made stuff before that's ended up on Fox, I think. So it Warner doesn't. It's just weird how stuff like that works. I mean, like NBC.
It wasn't Birds of Prey, that crappy TV show, Birds of Prey. That wasn't one of them, was it?
I wouldn't like to say.
I've not seen that Birds of Prey, but I do know at least one person that is a big fan of it, and I think their heart might have broken just now.
Oh.
I hope you're happy.
Sorry.
I'm not sure if we've just made Retrod cry.
Birds of Prey, I have no idea. I've not seen it.
Okay. That's cool. Damage hasn't been done.
But, I mean, the interesting thing is, though, is that there's an explosion now, and it's like... you know, not too long ago, we had an entire decade with Smallville. So it's not as though the concept of, you know, a TV show revolving around a main, you know, kind of comic book character
is new. You've
always had,
haven't you? To be fair, cause before that, you did have a TV series of The Flash anyway.
Yeah, and obviously there's, you know, the different Superman series, like The Adventures of Lois and Clark.
I'm trying to think of
other... Terry Hatcher.
I want to move.
She's no Amy Pond.
I want to move on slightly to the bit of this news though that annoyed me the most, which is the whole suggestion that there could be a Constantine TV series. Now, apart from that, it'd be heading towards NBC, which would indicate that it couldn't be that edgy. But then that doesn't matter about it not being that edgy, because Constantine in the current run of comics, the new stuff that happened as part of the New 52 of this year, he's a bit castrated anyway, so you know, he doesn't have much in the way of balls to kind of make for edgy TV at
he's
the
not my Constantine
he's not my Constantine either. It's ridiculous. And the I was saying, oh, it looked like it would be based off the New 52 one for Definite, but I haven't seen anything that said officially that. But from a logic perspective, there's no way they're going to base it off of the Hellblazer Vertigo series, because this is NBC we're talking about.
I'm just imagining a Constantine show starring Kenneth from 30 Rock.
Oh. No. That's so wrong. That's all levels wrong.
I'm just sitting here thinking how good a Hellraiser TV series would have been.
A Hellraiser?
Hellblazer, rather.
Yeah, Hellblazer, yeah.
See, I'm so lost in thought I get the name wrong.
What would have been...
that would have been awesome.
What would have been better is if somehow the BBC had wait, we would like to produce a comic book. Forget your American networks for a moment. Let us do the Hellblazer and we'll make it all weird and wonderful. That's in my little dream world, where Hellblazer actually gets to be set back in the UK. Because don't forget, in the current comics, he's in New York.
I mean,
he's not. There are no current comics.
I mean, to be honest, with the when it comes to the BBC, I think we're actually lucky that you know, Doctor Who is still so big and, you know, continuing, because... the BBC don't really, you know,
like
sci-fi,
stuff.
Fantasy stuff.
I think they fundamentally do not understand it.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. They think that sci-fi has to be, you know, like kid-friendly.
Yeah, but...
Or, you know, for children and young adults. You can make it friendly towards, but it doesn't have to be for...
But then they kind of revel in the kind of British kind of fantasy element. So, like, Robin Hood and Merlin... And that's kind of, so you're basically just retelling an old English.
Well, you say that, but obviously Atlantis started on Saturday. Has anyone actually seen that?
Yes.
Was it any good? I've heard things about mythology being butchered.
I've heard about bad acting in it as well. Is that true?
Wait, are you talking about Atlantis or Merlin?
Atlantis.
I couldn't tell.
I was going to say, it's not Merlin. I liked Merlin, as you know.
Sorry, Merlantis.
Merlantis.
But no, I'm still going to see where it goes and just see what happens, because I'm not watching the fucking X Factor, so I'll carry on watching that.
I'm thinking of having a peek at it on iPlayer to see what it's like. My main concern is from the guy, because it's been written by the guy who did Misfits.
There's no way in hell you're going to probably like this, to be fair.
I want to know, though, how the hell it's happened as it is because of the fact that it's written by the guy that created Misfits. And that's a pretty good TV series.
It is a bit weird, because you've got... the king is king... I can't remember his name now.
That memory. Okay.
That's how impressive it was.
Steve!
King Steve, that's the one. But he was actually... yeah, he's a bit fucked up. You've got Hercules in it, and you've got Pythagoras in it as his roommate in Atlantis, you know.
Pythagoras as his roommate.
Yeah.
You know what?
I have to wonder there, what's their angle?
Do you know what? I'm going to move away from those. Let's talk about Valve. Come on, can we just talk about Valve?
But I have to just tell Paul, one thing.
What?
Dr. Bashir is the king.
Yes, I did see that in the...
That's not enough.
I don't understand how or why he's taking the role.
He needed the money.
But yes, he is the king.
Valve, can we please talk about Valve? For the love of humanity, can we talk about what happened with Valve last
week?
You want to
talk about the Flash series, yeah? That's going to be good.
We're moving on. We're going to talk about Valve. Okay. So Valve made 3 announcements last week, as you do. Obviously, there was a large portion of the geek populace that were hoping for a Half-Life 3 announcement. Of course, that didn't happen. Nobody...
Of course it bloody didn't.
The internet would have destroyed... This podcast wouldn't be happening right now if Half-Life 3 had been announced.
Although, to be fair, because there's 3 of them, of these announcements, it proves that they can count to 3.
That's true. Maybe there's hope for them yet. Maybe. The 3 announcements were that they are creating a Steam OS, which is Linux-based.
Yay!
The next announcement was they were going to make a series of Steam machines, which were essentially PCs running this OS, but built to various different sort of needs and budgets, and so have various different price models. And then there was the Steam controller.
Which is a true WTF.
It is really nice. I like it.
It's got no physical buttons or sticks, really, and everything's kind of haptic feedback touchpads.
Yeah, they're trying to cross a regular kind of console based controller with PC style.
Yeah,
and put it this way: obviously, they've kind of designed it from the ground up. You know, kind of with that in mind, it's the fact that the Steam controller is obviously optional, so you'll still have a lot of people that will either just still play with keyboard and mouse, or will still continue to use the Windows Xbox 360 for PC control pad.
Now, little thing there, at the Eurogamer Expo, I noticed, I think there was at least one PC game, quite possibly more, which was using a console controller, and it wasn't the 360 pad.
Ooh, what was it?
The DualShock 4.
Mm.
I played Need for Speed Rivals on the show floor, PC version. They were all wired up using the DualShock 4, and when the control screen came up on the loading screen, it was a DualShock 4. So at least EA are going for the, yes, if you've got this controller and it's plugged in, we will support it natively. I have a feeling that the 360 pad has, you know, met its match for, you know, what PC gamers are going to be using. And I've got a feeling as well that if not the 360 pad that, you know, people would just keep using, possibly the Xbox One pad, which is not as nice as a thought it might be, but I don't think the Steam controller is going to be the controller.
Okay, well, if we ignore the controller situation with the Steam OS and obviously the boxes, what exactly are people feeling about those at the moment?
I think it makes a lot of sense because a lot of people, they only, you know, they game on Steam. That's it. Now, Valve have got the, by far, the largest slice of PC gaming, you know, ecosystem, both when it comes to, you know, the online infrastructure that people use and the DRM and, you know, the shop front. So they have all that, and up until now, they've needed full, well, if you've wanted the full Steam experience, you've got to have a Windows box, and of course that means Windows license, all of that. If they're doing it their own way, they can control this flavor of Linux that they've got and say it will support these things, and they can promise whoever wants to release games on SteamOS that these things will be there, and they will make sure of it because they're in control of that version of the operating system. So they're getting, you know, this is like, you know, the final stage of control that they need for PC gaming, and I think it's a positive.
I do as well. I mean, I haven't got a gaming rig as such for PC gaming. I only do console gaming, and I have been wondering what I'm going to be doing about the next gen. I've been swaying towards PS4, but when I saw Steam announce that, I'm actually tempted to hold on and see what they do. Especially if it's upgradable, like a PC.
Yeah, there are other reasons as well that I would say to see about that after playing on the next-gen machines.
I mean, to be honest, my concern with the Steam machines is that obviously, because part of the reason why people like consoles is because you know that every single game that comes out for, say, for example, the Xbox 360, you know, throughout its lifetime, you can play on any Xbox 360. You know, whereas PC gaming generally tends to be, oh, well, will this game actually run on my rig? And I don't really see them being able to tackle that if they've got, you know, kind of varying price models and whatnot. You're still going to need to be able to kind of upgrade it in order to get, you know, the games in the future.
I've got a feeling they'll be able to say anything above Steam 2014 certification. You know, any machine that meets that will be able to run this game, and that's how they'll handle it. So there'll be, you know, base specs and saying, you know, nothing below a certain level. Yeah. So that's a lot of netbooks and things like that would probably fail.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. If you walk into a shop and if you buy a, you know, 360 PS3 game, you take it home unless it's something daft which needs, you know, some stupid plug-in or, you know, things like that, you know, like a custom controller, then, yeah, you know it's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one console off the top of my head that's actually butchered that concept, which is actually the N64, because it had certain games that actually required the expansion pack.
Yes.
Yeah, the RAM pack, which, that was...
I mean, there are very few and far between, but... Yeah, the ones that actually actively required it rather than just having it as optional.
Yeah. Wasn't it pretty much Donkey Kong, Majora's Mask, and Perfect Dark?
Was Perfect Dark had to have the expansion?
If you wanted multiplayer, you could have a few of the multiplayer maps and a limited number of bots, but you couldn't play the campaign.
Right, yeah. Okay.
I remember that much because...
And Donkey Kong came with the expansion pack.
It did.
Yeah.
Because I remember I was reading Superplay at the time, and there were people writing in complaining, saying, I didn't read anything about this. I go, where the hell have you been living, the moon? you're buying a Nintendo game for a Nintendo console, and you read a Nintendo magazine. They've been banging on about this game requiring the bloody RAM pack for about, you know, the last year. How have you managed? But yeah.
Yeah. Retroid. As you were at the Eurogamer last week, I would love to hear from you your top three things from Eurogamer.
Now, would that be top three games or top three observations with games?
Anything. You can mix it up if you want. It's your choice.
You really like top three, I don't know, cocktails or something?
Could be that too.
He's not an 11-year-old who's been denied GTA.
Right, well, I have now played and I have held the controllers of the, you know, the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4. Of the two, I'd say I prefer the DualShock 4 because it's wider and it just feels better in your hand. It feels more like a slightly altered 360 pad than the Xbox One pad does. The Xbox One pad feels like the controller S for the original Xbox.
No.
As in the controller, not the Duke.
They're still too big.
Yeah, it feels bigger, it feels flatter, it doesn't feel as curved, and I didn't like it as much as I thought I would.
Did you get to...
Let's see. Rise is crap. It looks like an Xbox 360 game with a slight polish. It's a button masher.
Right, okay.
It's horrible. Dead Rising 3 was very nice. Resogun on PS4 is very nice indeed. But the overriding impression I got from both machines is that they don't really feel next gen.
Interesting.
And I have had a few friends with me. They were playing the two formats. And yeah, there were a few people who were cancelling pre-orders for them.
Wow.
Basically. Yeah. I didn't get to play Killzone Mercenary. Oh, no, sorry, Killzone Mercenary is a Vita game, isn't it? I did actually get to play that. That works quite well. But I didn't get to play the PlayStation 4 Killzone.
Killzone 4.
Because that was... The queues for that were just, you know, they were letting people play it, but they were just the PlayStation enclosure had its own queue that could go on for hours. And when you got inside, they were rationing people to two games that they could choose. And yeah, I just went up to the kill zone, but I'm just going, can I? Okay, turn around.
So
use an Xbox then.
Sorry.
Were the queues as big as Xbox?
For some of the games, yes. I've got a picture which was of an empty queue for Killer Instinct.
Wow.
That was not really popular at the show. And I saw people playing Next Gen Kinect with Kinect Sports, and that was... Yeah, it's still Kinect. With seeing people trying to control the jet ski and doing the rock climbing game, and it was lagging, and sometimes it was missing movements that they were doing.
Oh God!
So yeah, I'm not really that fussed about the Xbox One. Thank you. But let's see, Arkham City.
Yes.
Arkham Origins. Wasn't it? Batman Arkham Origins.
Yeah.
That was very nice. Thank you very much. I'll have that. Knack seemed like Ratchet and Clank, so if you liked Ratchet and Clank, there you go, there's your PS4 launch game. Dying Light was quite a nice little zombie game, and Titanfall, to my surprise, was actually very good.
I've been hearing a lot of good things about Titanfall on Twitter today. Like, a lot of people saying it was like their game of the show, and that people should really watch out for it.
I went the very first thing I did on Sunday, and bearing in mind Sunday was quieter than Saturday, was I went upstairs and queued for Titanfall, and I was still queuing for an hour.
Oh. Is this why people should really take things like 3DSs and stuff today, so that they can just kind of like try and do
it does things
together? I saw a lot of 3DSs and a lot of DSs. I don't think I tell a lie, I did actually see one or two Vitas, but it was mostly, you know, 3DSs that people were, you know, playing about with.
I know people don't like to think of Nintendo fondly on this show. But yeah, apart from me.
It's just Nintendo don't like me.
But I do like Nintendo's tactic of actually bringing the console to, you know, your local GameStop or game store. And, you know, allowing people to kind of play that way, that seems far more sensible than actually having everybody pay to kind of get in and then queue for hours to play, you know, their one favourite game, and then have that for, like, a couple of minutes, or whatever.
Yeah, the queues are insane. But, Killzone, Titanfall was very nice. Rather tellingly, it was the PC version. it was not either 360 or Xbox One. The version of Battlefield 4 that I played on was Xbox One, and it looked a little drab.
Now, drab as in they hadn't done anything exciting, or drab as in they'd gone a little overboard with the brown colour palette?
Drab as in if it was run, if it was a PC game, I would be going, this is done auto detect on my hardware and it's got it set too low. Let me go into the settings and, you know, put the detail up. that was the overriding thing that I saw on, you know, the next gen games, where it was, it looks like they look like PC games. They look like nice current generation games with, you know, more RAM and more oomph thrown at them. And yeah, it's early days, but and I saw Bill Bailey getting his photo taken with some zombies.
Did he look like he was having fun?
It did, yes.
Okay.
It was zombies. Just very surprising. There's Bill Bailey with some zombies. Okay. I'll just continue walking past.
Can I just ask? Because obviously the PS4's got the little touchpad on there. Did you get to play around with that at all?
None of the games I played about with used it.
Wow.
That I could tell. Need for Speed Rivals on PC didn't seem to use it. Resogun didn't seem to use it. Knack. It is Knack. I keep wanting to call it Clank because that's what it overwhelmingly reminds me of. He's Ratchet and Clank or Jack and Daxter. That didn't seem to use it. But overall, yeah, I liked, you know, I liked what I saw, but I'm pleased I don't have a pre-order.
Just to double check, there were definitely no Booth Babes this year, right?
No Booth Babes whatsoever. There were some pretty girls at, you know, of course they've all got lovely bottoms. that Father Ted joke there. I'm not being nasty. But
down with this sort of thing. Careful now.
With the lovely girls competition, there were some some young trim ladies behind, you know, counters selling things, but they weren't parading around in skimpy clothes or anything like that.
That's something.
So there were no booth babes of any sane description or anything like that.
Well, I'm glad they've managed to stick to their pact from last year when they promised everyone they were going to be extra vigilant in making sure no booth babes essentially were snuck in by any of the companies.
Well, it was mostly Virgin who did it last year. And as soon as it was found out, they weren't that impressed with them because it's like, you know, we said we didn't really want this, and it happened. So yeah, there were people who were not happy about that, and there was absolutely none of that. And there was absolutely no restrictions on the cosplayers, because I know a few people were saying, "Oh, this is just censorship." It's like, no, cosplayers could cosplay as whoever the hell they wanted, however the hell they wanted.
Was there any particularly good cosplays that you saw whilst you were up there this year?
There was. Well, I slightly biased because there were two I saw who I know from Twitter, and they were quite good.
What were they dressed as?
Sorry?
What were they dressed as?
One was dressed as, I think it's, is it Fran from Final Fantasy 12?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I think it's, you know, the bunny.
Yeah, it's Fran.
Warrioress with the bow. She was good. The other one I know from the Twitters, he was dressed as Sub-Zero.
Cool. Oh, God damn it. I didn't mean that.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Accidental pun.
There were a few Harley Quinns.
I went to a local con, which I've written about for Hex. That was DevCon the other weekend, and there was an abundance of Harley Quinn cosplay at that. I was quite surprised.
Now, were they mostly dressed in the sort of black and red leotard?
No, they were all pretty much pulling off impressions from the game and maybe a mixture of some of the more recent comics.
Now, I only saw, I think, maybe one or two of the sort of game style, where it's more of a bodice.
Hmm.
But most of the Harleys I saw were the, you know, the full, I'd say, Batman the Animated Series.
No, most of the ones I saw were definitely game and, like, Suicide Comics.
I kind of wish that I knew that there was going to be, like, tons of Harlequins, you know, at these conventions, because what I'd love to do is basically just interview anybody that's dressed up as Harlequin, asking them what do they think about the treatment of the competition.
And have
a legion of Harlequin fans going, no!
I don't want to bring that up again. I haven't got the energy to...
You wasted your hate on Constantine.
Yeah, there were no Constantine cosplayers.
To be honest, anyone who's going around in a slightly sort of dark beige trench coat with blonde hair and has a fondness for cigarettes whilst outside of Earl's Court could very well have been cosplaying of Constantine, but you just wouldn't know.
Whereas if there's a comic book character of, people standing around eating pasties from a local vendor while wearing geek T-shirts, then there are a hell of a lot of cosplayers. I mean, thousands.
Actually, just because, obviously, Eurogamer's been at Earl's Court since, like, what, forever? Really?
Well, they had a Expo North. But I think that was only 1 year.
I'm just wondering because there was the talk the other month of obviously Earl's Court being redeveloped. So it makes me wonder whether or not Eurogamer would stay in London and like jump over to somewhere like Excel instead. There's
a discussion going on, but apparently I think it's either Olympia is smaller than Earl's Court and Excel is smaller.
Again.
It might be about the same size, but they just think it's a bit soulless. And it's like a
box.
Well,
we've pulled open there for MCM once, and it was kind of
Well, the experts itself, MCM, it was mostly like, hey, yeah, we're gonna hark our geekwear.
Yeah, but I'm saying for in terms of as a space to actually have a convention, it's pretty bland. I will say it is quite bland.
Yeah, I personally think they should go to the O2 because I have several people I know who would cry if it went to the O2 because they hate the O2.
At the same time, we would actually have a decent train line going up to it that's air conditioned, so you know.
It would.
That would be a plus.
Yeah, I have a feeling that it can't go to a smaller venue now. It was barely big enough this year.
Okay.
And they opened up the upstairs and they had the 18 rated section. Apart from annoyingly, because there was the Xbox One stand and the PlayStation stand that had their own enclosures, they had their 18 rated stuff. Themselves, but yeah, the 18 rated stuff was upstairs this time rather than in their own sort of enclosure, and it was still hell to get around.
Okay, all right, I'm going to move us on to our main discussion for this week, which is going to be about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, obviously, if you haven't watched the pilot episode that was on last week and you do not wish to have any spoilers.
Why the hell are you here?
Yes, I believe it. I'm afraid this is the point of the episode where we must say goodbye to you. If you do not wish for the spoilers, otherwise we're going to have the spoilers. I don't know why I'm talking in this accent at the moment, but
Spark
there we
and
go.
Water, isn't it?
Is that Spark and Water? Yes. Jeez,
I thought I was in an episode of Hello, Hello.
Oh dear. Okay, I'm just trying to find. I've got some notes here that I wrote down. Whilst watching,
God, you note taker.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. How should we start? I think to start, shall we just get everyone's general feelings towards the episode first? Like, how did each of us?
I'll just say, can I go last?
Okay.
Ooh.
Cookie, do you want to go first?
I liked it. I'm looking forward to the second episode.
Okay, Martin.
Yeah, I liked it as well. I'm glad they changed the title from the original good Torchwood.
Not shit Torchwood.
What about you?
Me? I think it's got quite a lot of potential.
I quite liked it, but you could tell that in bringing the universe to the small screen, there have been sacrifices. Retroid?
Is it safe to say I'm the only one here who doesn't like Avengers Assemble?
Possibly. Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. Well, let's see. The high point for this was it didn't have Thor.
Wait the moment. There was a brief reference, I'm pretty sure, to his hammer.
Yeah, there was
one
a brief
point.
Reference to arms. Because it's like he's not a god, is it? You've not been in his arms. So like, yeah, whatever. But I think it should. Well, first of all, most of my issues with it might have been solved by it being a 90-minute pilot rather than, you know, without advert breaks.
Mm-hmm.
A 90-minute pilot rather than a 40-odd minute. But yeah, it felt very generic to me. It had one or two bits of Joss Whedon niceness, but yeah, I was very, well, I don't think I'd be watching it if it wasn't Joss Whedon.
Okay.
It's giving slightly more than a quick thing, but yeah, I'll shut up now.
Okay. What about the number of Whedon and Lumini that appeared in the episode?
It was almost Whedon bingo, wasn't it?
Maybe throughout the course of the series, somebody needs to produce a Whedon bingo card for the whole
definitely.
Series.
Definitely.
It's him. I spent about 20 minutes of the episode trying to work out where the hero had been until I worked out it was Gunn from Angel.
Hmm.
Yeah, I that was
J. August Richards.
J. August was the one I recognised the most because I've watched Angel far more than Firefly.
I did recognise the Firefly. Shepherd. That's
Ron Glass.
Sorry.
Ron Glass.
Oh right,
Shepherd book.
Sorry.
Yes, it was like, whoa, Breach is here. Woo!
Secondly, I thought it said like wrong guy or something like that. I was like, what? It wasn't him.
So it was, he's giving them jobs, he's looking after them. Good old Joss.
There we go, I mean, saying that, Dollhouse, you know, that obviously had, was it Amy Acker? And obviously Eliza Dushku. I'm not sure whether that's how you pronounce her name, but...
I think it is.
It sounds vaguely like it could be correct pronunciation.
Also in Dollhouse they had, I forget his name, but they had Wash.
All right. What, that Alan Tudyk? Or Tudyk?
Yes, he was in it. He played the oft-mentioned... Oh, now spoilers if you haven't seen it. Does it matter? You know, if you've not seen Dollhouse, which is a few years old now, and you call yourself a Joss Whedon fan?
No.
Okay, so we all knew that Coulson was going to be in this, but how do we feel that there was kind of like a lack of Nick Fury?
To be honest, I was... Sorry to jump in, guys, but I was kind of expecting that because Samuel L. Jackson,
He costs a lot.
He costs a lot, and I don't think... he's never been... As far as I'm aware, he's never actually been in a TV series, and I know there's some actors that kind of go between TV and film. TV and film. And other actors kind of stay in film. Other actors, you know, just basically try and stay in TV. The lady that plays Maria Hill, that was understandable because, you know, she's obviously been in How I Met Your Mother. So it's very understandable that they wouldn't have Samuel L. Jackson in there. I mean, it's same reason why I expected that there wasn't going to be any of the main heroes. You know, there, because that would be too expensive.
Because monies.
Exactly.
I'm surprised by the amount of special effects that were in the episode. At least in regards to, what was the character that Richards was playing?
Mike.
Was it Mike? Yeah. I'm looking through my notes. I can't find it at the moment.
Richards, as in?
Yeah, it was Mike. Joe, because Richards played. It was Mike Peterson. I was surprised by the amount of special effects that they did put in for his character. That though, did anyone feel that it looked just a little bit bad when he was crawling up the wall of that building? Just a bit. With his hands going through.
It was just me. I was getting Heroes flashbacks, which is not a good thing for me.
That's another thing they hate.
Yeah, it's like, oh, a series that had so much potential and they just pissed it all away.
I was really liking how they were playing off of the potential paranoia that would have been building up since the events of New York and Avengers Assemble.
Yeah, I think they've been really very good with making sure that the story is anchored in the same world by, you know, kind of referencing, you know, kind of the aliens, you know, Thor and whatnot, and everything else. They've really made sure that they've obviously kept it. But what I want to know is, obviously, you know, we're going to have stuff like Age of Ultron and, you know, the different movies are actually going to kind of progress and whatnot. Are those going to be fed somehow into the timeline with the series?
One would assume so if it continues for long enough.
If they had sense, they would, which probably means no.
And, I mean, going back to the whole Nick Fury thing, I think that might have been a bit deliberate in the pilot anyway, because the way they were talking about how Coulson hasn't had any contact with him since his time in Tahiti.
Yeah, they were setting a few things up, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I actually quite like that they didn't use him, because I never expected they would because of previously mentioned Sam Jackson regions, but also it kind of makes it feel like a big organisation rather than Sam Jackson's private little club.
That's true.
Private little army, yeah.
Okay, theories about Coulson.
He's got a bit of that stupid flashy cube thing from stupid Thor's stupid planet in him.
Right. I'm
trying to hide what I think of some of the Marvel universe there.
And I think you're referring to, was it the Tesseract?
Whatever it is.
Tesseract.
Yeah.
I've got the feeling that he might be like a clone or something.
Just something, or an alternate universe one, or he's actually an ice bloke that's been given a new face and mind wiped, or something stupid.
What, you mean a bit like Heroes?
Well, I was actually harking back to the Loki's origin in the the film.
All right, okay.
I was thinking,
which was stupid.
I was thinking along the lines of a clone, something like that, but I actually saw some tweets on Twitter that made me grin.
Oh, yeah?
Nope.
Some tweets on Twitter were suggesting that perhaps he might actually be the Vision.
The Vision.
All right, is Scarlet
Witch's husband.
Who? Spot-the-person who isn't into the Marvel Universe.
But because that was the whole thing, it's like Scarlet Witch is one of the X-Men characters that hasn't been tied up in Fox stuff, am I right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh god, though, but then Scarlet Witch is like... Scarlet Witch is bad news, or...
Scarlet Witch is basically Magneto's daughter.
And she's bad news normally.
I was going to, less bad news now, because not many people have as much, you know, cassettes. Yeah. You know, for all their collections, because of that, yeah, it's absolute hell if you just invite them around. I'll just put this film on, it's great. It's not working.
Really? See, that'd be fantastic. A version of Be Kind Rewind played with Magneto.
I'm on board. Kickstarter it, go on.
I think... Maybe Nick Fury just has a mate at a travel agent who got him a really good deal, and he doesn't want to send the rest of S.H.I.E.L.D. off on holidays to Tahiti, so he's like, oh no, Coulson never went either.
Oh, Tahiti is actually code for limbo.
Yeah.
One thing that's been suggested is every time he says Tahiti, he says it's a magical place, as if it's some sort of post-hypnotic suggestion.
That's quite, I can see Joss doing something like that.
But
I'm desperately hoping some more of the Joss magic comes through. I mean, I had the same kind of thing with it. It depends what controls have been put on him with it being a TV series.
Yeah.
What things he's having to work with and work around. Because after all, I ended up, like I've said before, you know, if you ignore large parts of the first season and bits of the second of Doll's House and take it as a whole with where he just, you know, right, I'm not being given the full thing. I'm just going to go for it.
Yeah, I quite like Dollhouse.
I quite liked Dollhouse in the end, but if you just take it from the early episodes, it was a very formulaic, person of the week.
It did take about 6 episodes to get going.
Yeah, and that's because Fox repeatedly, you know, what's this story arc that you're going on about? You know, people don't want story arcs. Is it? Yeah, they do. You're just being assholes. So I'm really hoping that a lot of the reservations I've got about this series, because it just feels very, it's going to be, you know, person who can do unusual thing of the week.
Well, to be fair, can I just interject? If you look at virtually any series out there, you know, they all do that because they have to kind of plant the seeds.
That's why I always wanted to do a pilot, so you could have the, oh, he is someone who can do something, and we're making the point here, and this is how we get the crew together, and they'd be able to spend more time and sow more of the, you know, the arc seeds.
Yeah.
There, because it didn't really have a chance, apart from, as you say, did he die or not? And the answer is he probably did, and there's something that you don't know about him.
I think there's something to do with the Asian woman who joined the crew as well. There's some tension there as well, isn't there? As to why she wasn't on field duty in the first place and why she didn't want to go on field duty.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that in there.
I have to admit, the ratio of male to female is actually far more positive than most other kind of things of the same ilk out there. You know, you have, at least one of the researchers, and, you know, the one that ended up getting kind of recruited that was from that other agency and whatnot. And, you know, so there's basically 3 main female characters, and there's 3 main male characters. It's basically Friends.
For Joss.
No, there's 4 main female characters, if you include Maria Hill.
That's true. But I don't, because she's technically not part of the team, the unit. She's kind of the boss.
For one episode as well, isn't she? I think.
I've noticed that a lot of people have been quite harsh on this first episode, like looking at some comments on Twitter and a couple of blogs that have gone up and that. I find that a bit ridiculous because this was the pilot.
This set everything up, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you can expect like the second and third episode to be not that interesting before you go into the fourth or fifth episode, and you know there's a nice little plant there, and you know it's almost formulaic how series are actually made.
And especially Joss series when he's got conditions put on him like this.
Yeah.
One thing I thought was very clever from a production standpoint, it's like we're saying that obviously there's a lot, whilst this was very expensive and cost more than my rent, it's a lot cheaper than something like the Avengers. And what I thought was very clever is the idea that if they're going around to different cities each week, that the main set is their plane.
Yeah.
So they can shoot on nice sound stages and say they're anywhere.
Got the Enterprise. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. They can have a base and they can be in different parts of the world, but they've still got the same set.
I thought that was a clever way to get around that without making it feel like too cheap.
And the fact that they're not actually on the helicarrier as well.
Yeah, so they don't have that was a stupid idea.
Sorry?
That was a stupid idea, helicarrier. So what happens if the engines get blown out by someone who, I don't know, has superpowers?
Because
that'll never happen.
the extremists being root of this episode's kind of problems, as it were.
Yes.
Well, as in the plot, you know.
Like, yeah, I wouldn't say problem.
The problems for the characters.
Yeah.
Extremists are at the root of it. Talk about the extremists.
I quite liked the fact that they've actually brought in that. Admittedly, it is the first episode. Well, so you kind of expect it to be a bit too early, but it's quite nice that they have already tied it up into the universe already.
Yes.
It just makes actually makes more sense now if you think about it, because if Extremis is still around, then that means that Tony Stark can't really turn his back on it, which then means that the next Avengers film will still contain Iron Man.
Which means I'll see it. He's one of the few Marvel characters I actually quite like. And Robert Downey Jr. does a very good Stark.
You going to say Martin?
I thought it was quite economic writing, because you've got to spend about, 20 minutes, half an hour of your pilot setting up who your new characters are, and you don't really, and you've got the J. August Richards storyline, which you need to set up, so you don't really have any time for villains. So they were able to take the element from the film and just use it, but at the same time, they didn't go out of their way to explain what that was. They just said, it's new, and that got you up to speed if you hadn't seen Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
That's true. I think in general it's quite good that they've deliberately kept it so that the team is just basically humans. They're not like superhuman. They're not gods. They're not millionaires that have access to unfound brilliant technologies and whatnot. And I think they've still got the potential because they didn't actually kill off J. August Richards' character Mike, although. When he was shot in the head, I was like, "They did it! Hold on, what?" and then I saw like the sniper guy going, with this weird gun, and it's like, "Yeah, okay, fair enough."
I was just going to say I am fully expecting that I will be loving this series by about 6 episodes in.
Okay. Mm. I wanted to ask if anyone had any theories on who the bad guys are that have helped things happen so far, obviously with extremists being used, like who's actually maybe lurking in the background causing headaches for people?
The French.
I think it's the Fox executives.
Okay. I think that maybe not this season, but maybe next season, depending on when Age of Ultron's out, but I think they may actually use the series as a platform that leads up to the film.
It could be.
I was kind of hoping it'd be something like Hydra.
Mm.
I think I heard somebody else who was hoping it'd be Hydra.
That'd be cool to see them brought back in a proper way.
The tech would also be right up their alley.
Yes.
In terms of just kind of giving sort of like lethal tech to just sort of regular people and seeing what the hell happens whilst they get on with whatever they're really trying to get on with. World domination of some kind, obviously. Yeah.
I mean, it could be as the teaser thingy-majiggy at the end of Avengers Assemble, kind of hinted at. It could be like their version of Skrulls, possibly.
Mm.
You know, again with like secret invasion type thing.
Oh, maybe that's what Coulson is.
Mm.
Ooh.
That'd be a nice little twist, wouldn't it?
Skrulls.
Skrulls? You don't know about the Skrulls.
They basically just want to invade Earth and take over the population.
Just everyone.
And they look kind of funky.
And you have Super Skrull who has all the powers of the Fantastic Four.
Okay. But they stand no chance against zombified superheroes. I know that.
That's good to know.
But apparently nobody stands much of a chance against zombified superheroes.
Not even Wolverine, which I don't get.
Well, Marvel Zombies is a discussion for another day.
Yeah. That's very true.
I'm just sitting here with the hell expression. Marvel zombies, that's a thing.
It's a thing.
It is a thing, yeah.
It's a thing. Yeah.
You had X-Men versus vampires the other year as well, didn't you?
Really?
Yeah, with Dracula in it.
Sounds about right. Oh, humour. There was humour in this episode.
Yeah.
I loved that. And it was, you know, quite Whedon-esque humour that kind of snuck in.
Especially... The truth serum.
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
I did really like that. Because I feel I have to defend my masculinity in front of attractive women. Damn!
Or what about the little hover robot things being called after the Seven Dwarfs?
Where can you buy them?
Yes.
I want some. They were cool.
I do wonder how good they would be at trying to deal with the local seagull population.
They wouldn't stand a chance.
Who, the seagulls or the robots?
Seagulls versus robots.
That'd be cool.
The movie. It can't be any worse than Sharknado.
Sharknado.
I can never pronounce it properly.
Not Sharknado.
Did you actually watch that?
Nope.
I've seen the trailer.
Is that the one where sharks attack the popular chicken restaurant?
Maybe.
Sharknado.
I've never actually seen it. I just hear people raving about it all the time.
It's by the Asylum, so I can't trust it in any way or form because I've seen several of their films already. There was another great line that was in this episode. Was the reference to sweaty cosplay girls around Stark Tower?
Yes.
That was the thing for you. I did like that, and also just the fact that they were kind of sending up the hacker, you know, the woman that was trying to find out who Richard's character was and what he was about. Just kind of like they were aware that they were stereotyping like the hacker kind of type, and that they could like perform miracles, because one of the descriptions was like pseudo anarchist hacker types.
Yeah,
it was very aware, and I liked that, because a lot of the time when you get people like that portrayed in films and TV, it's a bit cliche and a bit unrealistic.
Well, I mean,
because they might as well just hit but a keyboard for a few minutes, and all of a sudden they've hacked into the Pentagon and averted a nuclear holocaust.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's like in even in what was it, Iron Man 1, you know, Pepper Potts, you know, goes into Obadiah's office, you know, kind of starts downloading stuff to the USB drive, and it automatically opens up all the files and plays all the videos as well.
And has little pings.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it does. But yeah, everything on a computer, when you do anything on it, it has a little electronic noise to symbolise I'm doing something. I'm doing something electronic, I'm all electronic me.
Do you know what, there is, somebody put up an article recently, I think it might have been just about UX design, or it might have been for games design, saying that sound is like one of the most underutilised parts of computer programmes, and that it needs to be used more.
Unless someone's hacking on telly.
Hacking on telly, even, you end up with like a really complicated interface that looks utterly ridiculous, or it's lots of stuff on black.
Mm. Yeah, like in the last season of Chuck, when like Chuck's obviously in a hacking match against the guy played by Freddie Wong from you know, obviously YouTube, and you know, kind of the you know, speed at which they do it and just basically the lines and whatnot, and it's like, yeah, I don't think hacking quite goes like that either, to be honest.
So.
I was reading something about how, if you have a computer but beeps every time you touch it, it would be really irritating. And I had a touchscreen at work that did that, and I'd never been happier. It was like being in a movie.
Yeah, for a while.
So generally, most of us are actually quite happy with how S.H.I.E.L.D. started off, and we're actually looking forward to, this Friday.
Yes. Mm.
I'm more hopeful about where it's going rather than what it's done so far, but yeah.
I mean, I want to reiterate, the people that have been a bit harsh about the pilot, like, generally, on the internet, it's kind of like, well, it was the pilot.
Now, Emily, you shouldn't listen to people on the internet.
It wasn't even like I was reading the bottom half of the internet.
I don't think you should say something like that on a podcast.
Good point.
All right, well, I believe that is actually all we've got time for this week. And it's goodbye from...
Martin, a.k.a. The Faldor, on Twitter from theextendededition.net.
And it's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie. And you can also find me lurking around Hex Dimension and GameJar.com.
Okay, and it's good night from me, Paul Blue. I have a website, paul-blue.com. That's a portfolio site. And I'm on I'm in Twitter as Paul Blue.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You could also maybe go skulk around drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerd Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also find us on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And don't forget to check out Hex Dimension. And please remember that Hex Dimension are looking for additional contributors, video, writing things. We would like to hear from you if you're interested in doing some funky stuff. Just as another note, we'll be hopefully launching in October a competition for some Halloween-y sort of goodies. They have yet to arrive in the post, however they will be arriving in the post, and we will obviously update you on competition details once we've got that all sorted. That is all. Good night.
Night.
Good night.
Good night.